Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm Tom Lyons. We're broadcasting from the Minnesota State Fair today. And today we'll talk to service members from the Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, and we'll learn about the Yellow Ribbon Recognition Program. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Tomorrow is Labor Day, a United States federal holiday, observed on the first Monday in September. The first Labor Day in the United States was observed on August 26, 1878 in Boston by the Central Labor Union of New York, the nation's first integrated major trade union. Labor Day became a federal holiday in 1894. Traditionally, Labor Day is celebrated by most Americans as the symbolic end of summer. The holiday is often regarded as a day of rest and family gatherings. Forms of celebration include picnics, barbecues, fireworks displays, and water sports. Families with school-aged children take it as a last chance to travel before the end of summer, or spend a weekend shopping for last-minute back-to-school supplies. Those in the armed forces, and especially those of us that serve in the Guard and Reserve, relish not only the weekend with family, but also the significance of the holiday. I want to take a moment and thank organized labor and workers in Minnesota for their support of the Minnesota National Guard. So many of our citizen soldiers and airmen are in the professional trades, and the support of labor leadership has been steadfast. And programs like Helmets to Hard Hats are an important part of putting veterans in Minnesota back to work. And so, as you are enjoying the last vestiges of summer with families and friends, please remember those who aren't with their families, namely the men and women of our armed forces who are serving overseas. Please keep them in your thoughts and prayers until they are safely home with their loved ones.
Thank you, General Nash. You can link to the Adjutant General's blog, Facebook, Twitter feed through MinnesotaNationalGuard.org/generallyspeaking. Today we're broadcasting from the fair, and please join me in welcoming Captain Jeffrey Davis, Commanding Officer of the Naval Operations Support Center in Minneapolis. Captain Davis, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Good morning, Tom. Happy to be here.
Captain, I want to start out with the best question. What's the United States Navy doing in Minnesota?
That's a good question. Right now, the Navy Reserve is here, obviously. That's why I'm here. But the Navy Reserve is composed of, you know, roughly 55,000 reservists that drill on the weekends, do their AT, and then mobilize to do various things. The Navy can't support its missions by just drawing from the coast, so we have what we call the Prairie Navy here. And Redcom in the region, Midwest, is actually, we draw the largest number of reservists come from the Midwest.
And Captain, I understand you were commissioned in 1988?
Yes, I was. I commissioned through Officer Candidate School and in Newport, Rhode Island, following my college.
And you've had some pretty interesting postings. Can you tell us quickly about your career?
Certainly. I'm a, what's called a surface warfare officer in the Navy, so I'm a ship driver in layman's terms. So I've served many tours, mostly West Coast. I was on amphibious ships, served during the first Gulf War, served 4 or 5 tours on ships over in the Persian Gulf during Southern Watch, Operation Enduring Freedom. Also served on mine warfare ships, so we did a couple of mine clearance operations in the Baltic, over in Korea, around Japan. So kind of covered the globe, so to speak.
Pretty interesting career, Captain. Can you tell us in your current post, how many naval reservists do we have in Minnesota?
Well, in Minnesota, the drill at the Minnesota Reserve Center is we have roughly 800 reservists. They support 20 different units, and that's a little different than maybe the National Guard or the Army, where they don't drill as one solid unit. We've got the way the Navy Reserve works is typically do individual mobilizations to support an active duty command somewhere. So, for instance, we have a U.S. Forces Japan unit where it's mostly senior officers that will go over and support the U.S. Forces Japan staff that's headquartered over in Japan. They'll go over for major exercises or big contingencies. For example, the tsunami relief that just went over in Japan not too long ago, a good portion of that unit went over to support the staff while they were helping Japan deal with that crisis.
So unlike the Minnesota National Guard that just shipped out 2,400 soldiers, your naval reservists go out ones, twos, three at a time?
Generally, smaller units. We do have a CB unit that drills out of Minnesota or drills out of here, and they'll deploy a couple hundred. But again, they'll fall in on another unit, another CB unit that's already deployed and relieve one of the reserve section of that. We have hospital units where we'll have doctors and nurses go out and fill hospitals in Afghanistan, Iraq. We have security units that will go off and do the same sort of thing or do harbor security. So we have quite a few Navy right now, boots on ground over there in Afghanistan, Iraq, in Djibouti, the Horn of Africa, and they're doing coastal defense, harbor defense, you name it, they're involved.
So are some of your deployed naval reservists assigned to like guard units and Army and Air Force units?
Absolutely. They'll be standing doing checkpoints there side by side with the Army units or the Marines that are out there. They'll again be doing air defense on the Patriot batteries. They're multitask. They're looking for somebody with the skill sets, and they may not translate directly with the what we call the green or the green side, but typically the training is similar and they catch on pretty quick.
So, Captain, is this a situation where active duty troops or other Guard Reserve troops are deployed and they need a specific specialty and they call on the Navy to send someone over to fill that?
They will. And, again, as we draw down on the active side, you were seeing it all around with all the reserve forces, but the skill sets that are in the reserves are in high demand. So what we do is everybody has got their what we call their specialty, but then also you keep track of what they may be doing in their civilian world and where they can be used and what kind of talents. So we'll take computer guys, we'll go over and set up networks and things like that. And it may not be their natural what we call unit or billet or rating, but we'll take their skill sets and use them as where we can best use them.
We're speaking with Captain Jeffrey Davis, the commanding officer of Naval Operations Support Center, Minneapolis, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk, AM 1130. Captain, can you tell us about a unique deployment or two that might be of interest to our listeners?
Well, as I said earlier, I know from Minnesota that we had a large unit go over to Japan to do the tsunami or help with the tsunami relief. So not only the headquarters staff, but a bunch of the CBs went over for actual construction. They're heavy equipment operators. We've also had similar things with the Haiti relief. Things like that we get. We'll see what kind of draw we get for this current hurricane, where I suspect we'll get at least CB units looking for their heavy unit or heavy equipment operation to go over and help clear things like that. Again, we also support the war effort over in Afghanistan, Iraq, but again, those are ones and twos. It's the larger units where we end up going and doing the crisis type support.
And Captain, last question. What's the condition of our sailors in the United States Navy Reserve in Minneapolis?
Fantastic. I've got a great troop. I've only been here a month. I just took command a month ago, and I've been thoroughly impressed with with what I've found here in Minneapolis.
Captain, I want to thank you for joining us today. That was Captain Jeffrey Davis, commanding officer of Naval Operations Support Center, Minneapolis, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Please stay with us. We'll take a short break. When we come back, joining us is Lieutenant Colonel Chris Bush from the United States Marine Corps. Thanks. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Joining us for this segment is Lieutenant Colonel Chris Bush, commanding officer of the Marine Wing Support Squadron 471. Colonel, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Good morning, Tom. Thank you for the honor of being here.
Glad to have you here out in the fair. And I'm supposed to ask you, are you enjoying the fair? Have you had a chance to look around yet?
Our family loves the fair. It's a tradition for us going back many years. We spend most of our day foraging for food. So,
is this your good-looking crew down here?
Yes, this is Clan Bush up front here. So
we'll have to get some photos of that. Colonel, I understand you graduated from the University of Minnesota in 1990. How long have you been in the Marine Corps, sir?
I joined the Marine Corps in 1988, and so this October it'll be, if I can do Big Ten math, 23 years.
Pretty good, University of Minnesota. And Colonel, your career has brought you on several deployments?
I have had the opportunity to deploy with our Marines a number of times, most recently to the Horn of Africa.
And was that part of this current unit, or was that another assignment?
That was part of this unit. This unit, Marine Wing Support Squadron, went out as a provisional security force in support of the Joint Task Force over in the Horn of Africa, specifically in the country of Djibouti.
Djibouti, that sounds interesting. Sir, can you tell us a little bit about the Squadron 471, Marine Wing Support?
MWSS 471 is, the flag is here in Minnesota. The command is in Minnesota. We have Marines in Minnesota, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. There are 600 Marines and sailors total, both reserve and active duty. And our job is to provide aviation ground support service, which sounds like a big title, but just means we run and protect airfields.
Sounds like a great job for the Marine Corps, sir.
You got to love it. Good work for ditch diggers.
At any given time, how many Marines do you have deployed?
At any given time, we seem to have a detachment to a platoon-sized entity out, and this squadron and its on its own has done two full unit deployments in 2003 and again in 2008 and 2009.
So do you have any Marines out now, sir?
We do. We've got a group of our female Marines are in Afghanistan as female engagement team members. And some of our military police have just completed their pre-deployment training, and they will be providing convoy security in Afghanistan coming up beginning in this fall. And we're getting ready to send out another Company Minus, which will do the same thing in Afghanistan, convoy security.
Now, are your Marines signed to other active duty units in Afghanistan, or how does that work, sir?
Yes, the Marines getting ready to go. Our female engagement team Marines are assigned to a couple of the Marine infantry battalions, and the MPs will be assigned to whichever active duty, currently 2nd Marine Logistics Group, and soon to be 1st Marine Logistics Group.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Chris Bush, Commanding Officer of the Marine Wing Support Squadron 471, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour right here on News Talk, AM 1130. Colonel, can you give us an example of an interesting deployment that's happened recently? Hopefully everybody's safe.
We have had great success with our deployments. The most recent one, the one to the Horn of Africa, was very eye-opening for our Marines. They had an incredibly diverse mission. They were involved not only in providing security to Camp Lemonnier, but they worked extensively with foreign forces, Djiboutian forces, the French Foreign Legion, some of Spanish Special Forces. They were involved providing security for the U.S. Embassy, doing humanitarian assistance with 11 different villages within the nation of Djibouti, as well as providing port security to U.S. naval vessels when they were in the port of Djibouti. So,
interesting. We wouldn't think our Marines would be over there. You think about Iraq and Afghanistan and all the things in the news. But
it's a quiet little corner of operations, but it's definitely a crossroads of history, that part of the world.
And Colonel, while you're on the show, you're in Marine Corps Reserve, but you also have a full-time job with Parsons Electric. How does that work, having a full-time civilian job and then being a lieutenant colonel in the Marine Corps Reserve?
Well, that'd be a great question for my bride. She would tell you at times it doesn't. I am blessed.
She's laughing at us, sir.
She laughs at me regularly. I am blessed in that I work for an incredibly supportive employer. Parsons is full of a lot of quiet patriots, and there is never a failure on the part of my coworkers to step up and fill in when I need to be gone or when I am deployed. And at the moment, as a matter of fact, Parsons has three other employees that are forward deployed, two with the Red Bulls and one with the Air National Guard over in Iraq and Kuwait at the moment.
Puts quite a burden on the employer and some of your fellow employees, doesn't it?
It is, but they always do it with a smile, and the level of support is just absolutely humbling.
That's terrific stuff. There's a lot of good employers in Minnesota, members of the Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, and standing behind our deployed troops and taking care of them and their families.
They absolutely are. I think Minnesota employers oftentimes set the standard for what we would ask employers to give.
And Colonel, I know that the Marines and the Marine Corps Reserve is involved in a program coming up this December, the Toys for Tots program. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. The Toys for Tots program, as many are familiar with, is an annual campaign. Right now is a time of great need. Last year, Minnesotans demonstrated the generosity. We raised over 290,000 toys, $300,000 in cash that we were able to use to provide services and additional toys. And we were able to reach out through 250 different community organizations and get 270,000 plus toys distributed to children. So on an average, each child in need that we were contacted by received 1 to 2 toys. And it is truly a joy to see Santa at work through all of our fellow Minnesotans every year. So if you have the time, the energy, or the wherewithal, feel free to shop on the Toys for Tots behalf coming up. That campaign will start right around Thanksgiving and end just before Christmas.
Now, is your unit involved in the Toys for Tots?
We are. We're deeply involved in it.
Deeply involved, and they're just getting fired up for the program now, I would guess.
The planning is underway right now, and like I said, the campaign will kick off right around Thanksgiving and run right up to the edge of Christmas.
And if our listeners want to find out more information?
All you need to do is go to the Marine Corps Toys for Tots website, and if I was a little better prepared, I'd be able to quote that. But if you Google Toys for Tots, it'll pop right up.
Sorry, Colonel, I wasn't going to throw you any tough questions this morning. In your unit, we've been talking about these deployments, and you've been in the Marine Corps for quite some time. How are our Marines in Minnesota? What kind of shape are they in? How's their morale?
The morale of your Marines, and ladies and gentlemen, I refer to them as your Marines because they're your sons, daughters, nieces, nephews, husbands, wives, is incredible. And I am truly humbled by this generation of young warriors. When you think back to our day, we were kind of, well, not necessarily yourself, sir, but for me, when I joined the Marine Corps, war was something you talked about, it was something you prepared for, but it wasn't present. And since 2001, 70% of the Marine Corps today has signed on the bottom line knowing they would go to war. And I find that very, very humbling and very, very inspiring. And so it is an incredible young generation of men and women. They know how to think on their feet. They're incredibly giving. They're able to make decisions under extreme stress in challenging environments, and they do it very well over and over. And as soon as they're done in that role, I'm amazed at how well they transition back into being a brother, a sister, a husband, a wife, and just going back to doing what they do.
Colonel, I keep getting the question from civilians everywhere I go about the Guard and the Reserve and people saying that it's not fair that they go on these deployments. These deployments have been going on for 10 years. Is there a reservist in your unit that isn't aware that they're probably going to be deployed when they sign up?
They know they're going to deploy, and it is fair that they deploy. That's why they join the military. That's what we do. That's our obligation, and that's our duty. And so an individual in my mind who would say this is not fair is failing to understand the concept of service or why they should wear and should be honored to wear the uniform of our nation.
And your Marines are well aware, and they're prepared to go, and they keep signing up anyway, don't they?
Yes, sir, they do.
Colonel, one last question. You've been deployed. In Minnesota, we've got a lot of programs to support the troops and their families, like the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, family assistance centers. There's a lot of resources back here. How important is it to your Marines that are deployed to know that there's people back here that care and want to help the families?
That is absolutely paramount, and the state of Minnesota and all the volunteer organizations in the state have just done a masterful job of putting in place the structures that aren't available, generally speaking, unless you're on a major military installation. And that's all the difference, in many cases, between success and failure, is simply knowing that my family is taken care of or will be taken care of should something come up, so I can focus on what I need to do.
Focus on the mission and come home safe.
Absolutely.
Colonel, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for your time.
It was Lieutenant Colonel Chris Bush, commanding officer of the Marine Wing Support Squadron 471 on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase and discuss how Yellow Ribbon Networks are giving people a chance to show their appreciation to our nation's heroes. Last month, Governor Dayton proclaimed several communities Yellow Ribbon: Albert Lee, Cottage Grove, Eagan, Invergrove Heights, an alliance of Lower St. Croix Valley cities, Owatonna, Plymouth, Richfield, and Rosemont, as well as cities throughout Winona County, were proclaimed Yellow Ribbon communities. These communities achieved recognition by creating a sustainable action plan to support military families in every key area. From their churches and schools to their public safety and employers, leaders are on board. Their support enables successful transition for the whole military family throughout the deployment cycle. These Yellow Ribbon networks pay particular attention to the family, so the service member is able to concentrate on his or her mission and know that their family back home is being taken care of. The community's effort transcends the military to any group in need and builds a stronger, more compassionate community. Several other communities are currently in the process of creating their own Yellow Ribbon action plans to support military families. Thank you to all the Yellow Ribbon communities for showcasing how Minnesotans strive to go beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon connects service members and their families with organizations, agencies, companies, community support, training, services, and resources to bring our service members all the way home. To learn how you can make a difference in the life of a service member or military family, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. When we return, we'll hear from the United States Coast Guard. That's right here on News Talk, AM 1130. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelado.
Before the Great Minnesota Get-Together comes to a close, I encourage you to stop by our booth on the south side of the 4-H building. Our tables provide information on the 5 state veterans' homes, programs available for veterans and families, and information on applying for veterans' benefits. This area is a hub for all things veteran. Other groups represented include our veteran service organization partners, like the VFW, American Legion, and Disabled American Veterans, and the Federal VA. Finally, I want to thank the Fair for their tremendous support of veterans and military. Located just outside the Agricultural Building on Cooper Street is the State Fair Veterans Garden. This memorial garden features plaques honoring veterans from many conflicts, ranging from the Civil War to Vietnam. If you are visiting the fair, I encourage you to take a few moments to visit the garden and remember the tremendous sacrifices of these heroes.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelado. You can find out more about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs by calling 1-888-LINK-VET or online at minnesotaveteran.org. We are now joined by Petty Officer First Class Garrett Kravitz from the United States Coast Guard. Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Can you tell us how long have you been in the U.S. Coast Guard?
I've been in the Coast Guard just about 11 years.
And you've had some interesting assignments?
I have. I started out in 2001. I went to Cape May, New Jersey for basic training. From there, I went to Keokuk, Iowa, which is in the southeast corner of Iowa, on a Coast Guard river tender doing AIDS navigation servicing. From there, I went to South Portland, Maine to an AIDS navigation team, which is coastal floating AIDS navigation. And then I went to Portsmouth, New Hampshire on a 210-foot medium endurance cutter patrolling up and down the Atlantic. And now I'm currently stationed at Small Boat Station Duluth.
Can you share with us what in the world were you doing in Keokuk, Iowa, in the United States Coast Guard?
In Keokuk, the Coast Guard does maintenance on all the floating and fixed aids up and down the river to maintain commerce up and down the Mississippi River. The fixed aids are to make sure that they're using the right bank to make sure that the large freighters don't run aground, and the floating aids are to make sure that they stay inside the channel so that there's no disruption to commerce.
So basically navigation aids.
Yep, aids to navigation.
And now you're stationed up in Duluth?
I am up at Small Boat Station Duluth. We have 3 small boats. We have a 45-foot response boat medium for search and rescue. We also have a 25-foot response boat small, which is for search and rescue. And then we have a 24-foot special purpose craft, which is for shallow water, which is also for search and rescue and law enforcement.
So how many Coast Guard personnel are there in Duluth?
There's approximately 30 people attached to Station Duluth.
And they're full-time?
Yes, sir. Full time.
Can you give us an example of some of the missions you're going on of Duluth?
We do. There's people at the station 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for search and rescue response. If somebody had a problem on the water, they could call on Channel 16 or something like that, and we would respond accordingly. And then on a daily basis, we do recreational boating safety boardings, which we get underway. We look for a vessel, make sure that they have their carriage requirements, that they have their flares, their life jackets, making sure they're meeting all the requirements to be on the water for safe navigation so that we don't ever get to that point where it has to be a search and rescue case.
How often do you get called out on search and rescue missions?
This year has been pretty busy. We've had approximately 30 to 40 calls this year, anything ranging from a disabled vessel to an overdue vessel, a vessel that's broken down and the weather's coming in. We have to go out and tow them back into a safe harbor. I'd say approximately 30 to 40 this year. It's been relatively busy.
You were telling me earlier when we talked on one of your deployments about a pretty interesting search and rescue mission. Can you share that with us?
Yes, sir. When I was attached to Coast Guard Cutter Alliance out of Portsmouth, New Hampshire, we were down patrolling off of Cuba, Dominican Republic, right in that area. And we were out looking for, we were doing alien migrant interdiction operations, looking for people trying to smuggle other people into the United States. And while we were doing that, the person that was on watch saw a small scratch on the radar, so we went to... We took the cutter to investigate. Turned out being that it was a small vessel. So we launched the cutter small boat, and we went to check it out. And it turned out being two overdue fishermen from the Dominican Republic that were declared missing for 7 days. And when we got on scene, they were clearly famished, dehydrated. So we took them over onto the small boat, got them to the cutter, and then we took their handmade vessel that they made out of fiberglass. We got that and got that onto the cutter, took them back to the Dominican Republic and got them safely ashore. And then once they finally got home, was actually on Valentine's Day, and they actually got to see their family again. It was a great experience to get them back on board and see them just relieved that somebody had found them and somebody had saved them.
And you maintained their livelihood too, didn't you?
Yes, sir. We saved their boat. It was all handmade from scratch. He was pretty thankful of that we were actually able to save that, so we didn't have to start his livelihood all over again.
I'm sure he was. We're speaking with Petty Officer First Class Garrett Kravitz from the United States Coast Guard on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour right here on AM 1130. Petty Officer, you've been in the Coast Guard, you said, 10 years?
Yes, sir, 10 years.
What caused you to join the Coast Guard?
Initially, I joined up for get money for college, like most of the other service members. And then once I originally joined up to jump out of helicopters, but once I got in, I realized that probably wasn't maybe what I wanted to do, jump out of a perfectly good helicopter. So I decided to drive boats, and that's what I do now. And turns out I ended up enjoying my job, and I like being out there. And now we're in I joined a life-saving service. So the Coast Guard does safety and preservation of life at sea, and that's what we do every day, drive boats and keep people safe and get education out to the public to make sure that they're safe on the water.
And you were telling us you're stationed at Duluth, but we've got some Coast Guard further up north on Lake of the Woods, too?
Yes, we do. We have, from Station Duluth, we actually run two smaller stations. We have one that's in Grand Marais, which runs from Taconite Harbor up to Pigeon River, and they're up there seasonally through the summer. And then we have another auxiliary detachment that we just sent some active duty members to up on Lake of the Woods, doing small vessel safety boardings to make sure everybody's in compliance up there.
So do they all end up doing some search and rescue from time to time?
They are on search and rescue standby. If a case were to arise, they get the phone call, and then they go out and do their proper procedures to look for them and assist in any way they can.
Well, Lake Superior can get pretty rough sometimes, can it?
It can. I'm amazed at the weather. I've only been here about 2 months, and we've already seen some weather come in. It comes in quick. I'm absolutely amazed at the weather on Lake Superior.
But you've got big enough equipment to handle it, don't you?
Oh, yeah. The 45 responsible medium can handle quite a bit.
What do you think the future holds for you in the United States Coast Guard?
I'm hoping from here to pick up another advancement, make chief petty officer, and then hopefully get my own unit and be in charge of my own unit with 3-4 small boats, possibly 30 personnel. Hopefully that'll be within the next 2 to 3 years.
And do you have an idea how many United States Coast Guard personnel there are in Minnesota?
In Minnesota, I do not. I know right there at the base in Duluth, we have 30 attached to the station. And there's also the Coast Guard Cutter Alder, which does aids to navigation in Lake Superior. And then there's the aids to navigation team, which does the smaller aids to navigation in the smaller areas and smaller rivers. And then there's also the Marine Security Unit. Each one of those probably has between 20 and 30 members.
Sounds like you found your home in the United States Coast Guard.
I have. I enjoy it up here a lot.
What would you say to young people today thinking about joining a service or maybe the United States Coast Guard?
I think joining any service is a great, great thing to do to serve your country. The Coast Guard is, if you want to be on the water and educate the public on how to be safe on the water and be out there doing safety and preservation of life at sea, it's the service to join.
I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That was Petty Officer First Class Garrett Kravitz from the United States Coast Guard stationed in Duluth. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Yellow Ribbon Recognition Programs. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on AM 1130 News Talk. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Joining me for this segment is Annette Kuiper, with the Yellow Ribbon Recognition Program. She is the Director of Military Outreach for the state of Minnesota. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom.
Annette, we've been seeing each other for the last couple of weeks. You've had some big events for the Yellow Ribbon Program. Can you explain those to us?
We have. We've been able to recognize many of our communities across Minnesota that have gone over and above to support service members and military families. And they actually commit to an action plan from every key area within their community, and they submit it to the state of Minnesota. And we are so happy to recognize them around the whole state of Minnesota for those communities that have been able to make those commitments to our service members and military families.
So for those that maybe haven't heard this by now, the one or two in Minnesota, the Yellow Ribbon program started out as a reintegration program for our troops coming home and for the families, but it's grown into something much, much larger with the involvement of many, many communities around the state. And you're going to be up to how many within the next few weeks?
We're going to be up to 68 communities in Minnesota. And we will have 49 cities, 15 companies, and 4 counties that have submitted their action plans of support to support our service members and military families.
Now, we talked to Captain Davis and some other folks on the show today about how important it was to make sure that the families are taken care of when we have Minnesota troops deployed around the world, 35 different countries and thousands of military service members. What is it that these Yellow Ribbon communities do to help?
Well, this is a national model of support in which our communities have been asked to form a steering committee made up of key areas within their communities. And those key areas are the important areas of our communities, such as community leaders, public safety, medical and social services, volunteer organizations, veterans organizations, and youth and school programs. And businesses. They have all combined to come together to unite and coordinate their efforts to support service members and military families in so many different ways. From just combining their resources to make sure that they have resources available to military families, to organizing volunteer support to do simple things for our military families.
And Annette, you were involved in the first community to become Yellow Ribbon, weren't you?
I was. That was Farmington, Minnesota.
In 2008?
In 2008, yes.
And how are they doing now that you're Director of Military Outreach for the state of Minnesota and a little busier?
Well, Farmington, Minnesota has matured into a wonderful Yellow Ribbon community. They have met more and built trust with more military families. They are doing wonderful things, such as a monthly veteran dinner where they bring veterans together, a military mother-grandmother luncheon in which they bring mothers and grandmothers of currently serving service members together. They also have grown to over 400 volunteers that are ready to be called upon if a military family needs help, and they've done so many things within the community, and they've joined with other Yellow Ribbon networks in the area to assist them as well.
Can you give us an example of maybe one case where they responded greatly to a wounded soldier?
Absolutely. In one of our communities in Lakeville, we had a soldier who unfortunately lost both his legs in Afghanistan. Within hours, both the Lakeville and Farmington Yellow Ribbon networks activated support for this family, even as simple things as running to Target to get toiletries for the family as they were getting ready to go to Walter Reed. For 6 months after the family the mom and dad and the wife went to the Walter Reed to be with their injured soldier, they supported his children with caretakers who were left behind in Lakeville. And they brought meals. Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts helped the kids get ready for bed. The local public safety were able to take care of the lawn. And meals were provided by area churches to the family to ensure that they received support. Long after the crisis was over, they continue to support the family in so many ways.
I'm just sitting here thinking what they would have done 10 years ago.
No one would have known about it 10 years ago. Immediately upon hearing that her son was injured, this military mom contacted the Yellow Ribbon Network because she knew that they would activate support networks to be able to support her family.
Annette, as Director of Military Outreach for the state of Minnesota, what kind of things do you do in that position?
In my position, I'm really the great connector across the state. I connect communities, companies, and county leaders to ensure that they know about how they can support service members and veterans and military families. I help build efficiencies between agencies. I'm a liaison with the Department of Veterans Affairs and Department of Military Affairs to ensure that we're working together and we're coordinating with those wonderful Yellow Ribbon communities and all the support networks they have, and that we're connecting them to state and federal resources to ensure that we have the most efficient support across the state for service members and military families.
Now in Minnesota, the Minnesota National Guard, I understand, has 63 armories around the state. And when we deploy troops, like the 34th Infantry Red Bulls just went out, 2,400 soldiers, they come from every county of the state, don't they?
Absolutely. We have families. They're no longer from one community anymore. We have units that are spread out all across the state. And in the past, we've been reactive to those communities who are interested in becoming a Yellow Ribbon community. But once we began to see how it was working within our communities, it was combining and connecting resources for our military families, and we are seeing the impact that a Yellow Ribbon community can have, we proactively contacted those armory communities throughout Minnesota, and we asked them to join our efforts in the Yellow Ribbon Recognition Program. And of course, they responded just wonderfully, and we've helped get them organized to become Yellow Ribbon communities themselves.
And of course, today there's a lot more support out there than there was 10 or 20 or even 40 years ago. How does someone know if they have a Yellow Ribbon community near them, and how do they get involved?
Our Yellow Ribbon, our BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org site, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, is a wonderful website in which people can go on and see what communities have been proclaimed Yellow Ribbon. If you click on that community, you can see the point of contact, phone number, and email. If you don't find your community on that website, there's also a contact email that will come to our office, and we will connect you to the local Yellow Ribbon Network, or we will partner with you to get one started in your own community.
And the best place to go on the internet to find information?
BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, www.beyondtheyellowribbon.org.
Our favorite website, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Annette, I want to thank you for joining us today. We're broadcasting from the State Fair. This is Annette Kuiper, the Director of Military Outreach for the state of Minnesota with the Yellow Ribbon Recognition Programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Joining us now is Sergeant First Class Melanie Nelson for the mailbag. Nelson, Melanie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. Well, I have a letter from Chuck in the mailbag today. He writes, I am a new Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Facebook fan. It looks like I'll be learning a lot about events and deals for military families here on Facebook. But is there anything else I should be checking regularly to take advantage of opportunities?
Sounds like a pretty good question.
Well, and you know where I'm going to send them, beyondtheyellowribbon.org. Of course, we love Facebook, and if you go to our site or you just put in beyondtheyellowribbon.org, we'd love you to like us on Facebook, and we do have a lot of opportunities. It's a great place where families are posting their photos, and we love to see the interaction on there. And as Annette just mentioned, those Yellow Ribbon communities, many of them have their own Facebooks that we love to keep track of as well, and you can click to them through our Facebook at beyondtheyellowribbon.org. But to answer Chuck's question, where should he be checking regularly? On our website, beyondtheyellowribbon.org, there is an events and deals page. And, Tom, we get updates for that thing every single day. People have things going on all across the state for military families, discounts, dinners, all kinds of things. And we post them all there. There is a yellow box that comes up when you visit our website, join our membership. If you join, you don't even have to think about it because I'll email you each week all of the deals that are going on that week. Or just check in, periodically if you want to see what's going on in a few weeks.
Melanie, I know you do that because I signed up for it, and I get that email every week. There are a lot of events, aren't there?
There are. As a matter of fact, one of the gals in the office just yesterday, she said, well, boy, we only have 5 events coming up in the next 2 days. And the other guy said, well, thank heavens, we had 12 last week.
Only 12?
Only 12 last week. Can you imagine that?
Hey, once again, if they want to sign up for that email, where do they go?
BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org and click on the Join Our Membership button.
Thanks, Melanie.
You're welcome.
And if you have a question, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week. Captain Jeffrey Davis from the United States Navy, Lieutenant Colonel Chris Bush from the United States Marine Corps Reserve, Petty Officer First Class Garrett Kravis from the United States Coast Guard, Annette Kuiper, the Director of Military Outreach from the state of Minnesota, Commissioner Larry Shelado, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Melanie Nelson from Deployment Support, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week when we talk about helping Afghanistan with agricultural solutions, and we learn about the Minnesota National Guard's 148th Fighter Wing and 133rd Airlift Wing. That's next Sunday morning at 7, right here on News Talk, AM 1130. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.